Il-program li ser tisimaw huwa miġjublilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM 103.7. I'm Patricia Cavalleri, and in this series we shall be hearing from academics about their research and from students and other members of the campus community about the many activities which will be taking place during the coming year. I'm very pleased to have with me today on University Matters on Campus FM, Professor Angela Abela. Professor Abela is the head of the Department of Family Studies within the Faculty for Social Wellbeing here at the University of Malta. She was a course proposer for the Master in Family Therapy and Systemic Practice and the Master in Family Studies. Professor Abela is a clinical psychologist and a UKCP registered family therapist and a supervisor. As past president of the Maltese Psychological Association, she has played a pioneering role in the setting up of the psychology profession in Malta. She has also spearheaded the setting up of the Maltese Association for Family Therapy and Systemic Practice, which is affiliated to the NFTO Forum of the European Family Therapy Association. She's a former chairperson of the National Family Commission and a consultant in the area of children and families for government and the standing committees on social affairs and on family affairs in Parliament. She supervises professionals' work in public social agencies in the area of children and families. And on an international level, she has worked extensively as an expert of the Council of Europe in the area of children and families. She holds a PhD from the Tavistock Clinic and the University of London, and a master's degree in clinical psychology from the Université de la Sorbonne, Paris-5. She has published in the area of children and families and on supervision practice. And Professor Abela is an associate editor on clinical child psychology and psychiatry, published by SAGE. She's also an international advisory editor of Contemporary Family Therapy, an international journal, a peer-reviewed journal published by Springer Science. Welcome to the program, Professor Abela.
Thank you for inviting me, Tricia.
I always like to give this bio so that people really can get to know you in a professional sense, know where you're coming from, know what your interests are, and know how connected you are, as are many of our researchers here and lecturers, connected to Europe and to world associations. So you benefit from that, and they also benefit from your experience as well. And I think that's very important to make very clear to our listeners. The family, we're going to talk about the family today.
Yes.
It's such a wide subject. So when I was thinking now, what shall I ask Professor Abela? So many questions. I said, let me look at your particular research interests. And I saw that parenting, of course, was one of them. And it's something that interests me, obviously, as a mother and now as a grandmother. I was born in the 50s, and my own children were growing up in the late 70s and in the 80s. Now I watch my own children bringing up theirs. I feel that approaches to parenting have changed enormously, and I'm looking at it purely from the sort of experience and amateur point of view within the last generations. What would you say were the main changes, and why have they come about?
I think that obviously a number of factors have contributed to the change. The fact, for example, that women have increasingly joined the labor market has led them to want to share the upbringing of the children with their partners, their husbands, even with their mothers, when they are available. So, and that is very important, actually, to be able to have help and support. It's important, especially in the world we live today, where there is a lot of rush, there isn't the time to stop and talk. You need people who are very close to you, who are able to support you. But obviously, parenting has also been influenced by a lot of studies and which have brought about paradigm shifts in the way we look at parenting, because we have an increased understanding on the processes that are at stake and that help children reach their optimum development. So, for example, we now know that in the early years it's very important for children to be stimulated. So we provide them with a lot of activities that they do, craft, drawing, singing, nursery rhymes. We know that all this helps children. Attachment theory has also brought highlighted the importance of providing a secure attachment for children, and how that is important throughout the life course, how it influences the choice of partner and eventually your own parenting style. How poverty, for example, disrupts the parenting relationship and increases the divide between children. We now know, I was in Sydney a couple of weeks ago, and a new book on children left behind has been written, where policies in four different countries, Canada, Australia, England and the USA, were compared in terms of the early development of the child. And we now know that children who start on the wrong footing have, even at the very age of three, you know, the way they start school, the level of cognitive development that they have is going to reflect on their performance, and the school is not enough to help. We need to intervene in the primary years. And middle-class parents are very aware of this. They know, they read, they stimulate their children, they have more access to information, more better connected networks. And so they influence the children. And in this respect, Trisha, I think it was a privilege for our department and for myself to be writing a positive parenting policy for Malta, for the ministry, for the family. We have had a long-standing agreement as a department with government in terms of providing our expertise. And we have been asked to write this policy on positive parenting, which we have done. The public consultations were wonderful. Everybody has welcomed this with open arms from all areas, and we hope it will be launched in December. And the aim is to support parents, to support all parents, especially those who most need it. And I'm very much looking forward to that.
Yes, I'm sure everybody in your area would be definitely waiting for it with bated breath. And this is a wonderful example where our academics are actually influencing what goes on in society by writing these important reports. And I think that's also a point I always like to make during these interviews with our researchers, that they're not, especially in your case, not sitting writing papers for journals, peer-reviewed journals only, but they're really, really helping.
That is a very important value for me. And maybe that is why I did not just focus on one topic in my research. When I first studied clinical psychology in Paris at the Sorbonne, it was a wonderful experience, very exciting. And then when I came here in the Department of Psychology originally, Father Alfred Darmanin was our head many, many years ago. And he was the one to tell me to start teaching on family. And then I was lucky to get a place to read for my PhD in the Department of Children and Families at the Tavistock Clinic and the University of London. It was a clinical PhD, and there I focused on marital conflict and on marital relationships. But eventually, when I came back, there were so many needs. For example, there was a time I was chairing the National Family Commission, and there was a consensus that we should focus on family poverty. And I felt, together with Father Charles Tabone, I had to take the lead on this. Similarly, when we were invited on a focus group of experts with the Commissioner for Children on Children and Out-of-Home Care, there was a need for research. And, you know, these children do not really have a voice. And for me, it's important that we someone gives these people a voice.
Absolutely.
And it is our role, I believe. So I became an applied psychologist. I'm also a practitioner, so I see a lot of different situations.
But that's the best thing, really.
It's
seeing things, touching things.
On a research perspective,
sure.
To move from one area to another is very demanding.
One of the questions I wanted to ask you, actually, was this. I know that you have this special interest in families living in poverty and the effects that it has on children. Here in Malta, obviously, I imagine, though it's not so visible, yes, there is a poverty level when it comes to access to finance, and perhaps poverty cannot only be measured in financial terms either. So I imagine that it's a complex situation, families in poverty.
It is a very complex and challenging situation. First of all, I mean, it is also, in my opinion, an alarming situation because one in three children in Malta live at risk of poverty, and we have the highest rate of children who leave school early and are not in employment in Europe. And the answer, I mean, we can do loads of different things, of course, we cannot, but we need to focus more on early education because all the research is pointing towards that direction. And as I've already said, the poverty disrupts the parenting relationship. The brain likes to be stimulated, and that is the way forward to help children and parents. And it isn't something that we should do only with the children. We need to include the parents. Schools have to be open to parents more, and early education from the positive parenting policy highlights the importance of starting with the parent craft courses where 98% of parents attend.
So there is a great interest.
There is an infrastructure, and we need to do more to help parents with evidence-based parenting courses to be able to first and foremost have a secure bond with their children and know more about the importance of attachment. I think many do not know enough about the importance of attachment and creating that secure bond, the importance of warmth. And we need to know more about resilience, how children and families thrive. That resilience is not about being a hardy individual. It's also about having good support networks. It's also about having professionals who do not only attend easily to middle class clients or patients or whatever, but are able to connect even with people who may feel othered very easily and who have more difficulty. We need to be more aware of that, more aware of our nonverbals, the way we look at people, the connection we make, and the way we make them feel at ease and able to talk to us about the challenges they are facing. Because if we don't do that, the chances are they say that everything is all right when not everything is all right.
Another area of interest that I know you have is couple relationships in contemporary society. It's a unit that you lecture here at university, and in fact you're a joint editor of a publication entitled Contemporary Issues in Family Studies, Global Perspectives on Partnerships, Parenting and Support in the Changing World. And I know also that you are a member of the President's Foundation, and you're working as chair of the National Centre for Family Studies within that foundation. So you're obviously very, very keen on looking at couple relationships. Again, what do you think are the main, shall we say, challenges and issues in this area at the moment?
Of couple relationships. I think that, first of all, couple relationships continue to be popular. The main, many aspire to live in a long-term relationship with a partner, be it a same-sex partner. We know how much there has been, the need to have that right, even for same-sex couples to have that relationship you know, even through civil partnership and even for those who may not marry. It is true that in Malta we've seen a very big shift in terms of having 1 in 4 children born out of marriage in a matter of 6 years. That was a very big shift that nobody, I think, was expecting. It came up to 1 in 4 in a matter of 6 years. But what we are finding now, we've just done a very big study on single-parent families in Malta that we are writing up for publication, a population study of all single-parent families whose youngest child is 3, that 1/3 of them are still in a romantic relationship with the biological father of the child, and others, another 1/3 are in a relationship where the father is supporting the child. And the other thing that is interesting is that in spite of the statistics, the crude marriage rate in Malta is the 3rd highest in Europe. So marriage is still very popular in Malta. Obviously, the couple relationship is important, not only for the couple, because it is a source of resilience when it works well and it supports the other person, but it is also important for children. First and foremost, because children learn by what they see. And the way the children behave will mirror the relationship that the parents have between them. Sort of they create the psychosocial interior of the family, the warmth that the family we all long for is sometimes difficult to achieve, but that is so nurturing, you know, that helps us grow and thrive and be creative and not having to sweat and stress on things that are not important, you know, that if there is stress, become more important for your survival, for your sense of safety, because safety is very important.
I'm interested in this idea that the number of marriages is pretty stable. One hears perhaps bad news gets spoken about more than good news. Yes. So one hears about a lot about separations, we all have friends and examples and all that around us. And one wonders whether younger people are ready to make that commitment, long-term commitment. But it seems from what you're saying that they are.
They are. And maybe, yes, it's true, some of them may end up not living with the partner of their first child, at least 1/3, but they move on and do form relationships that are more long-term. So far, in spite of what the journalists say, from the last census, the separation rate is not very high, 6-8%, including the 1% who got divorced. So it's not, when compared to European countries, where 1 in 3, I think it's a good sign. I think stable relationships are very healthy. As long as they are, I mean, stable, constructive relationships, not those that are filled with violence, hate, cruelty. Those kind of relationships are very destructive.
Do you think that here there is perhaps a bit of social pressure to marry still or not? I mean, in England there is very little social pressure, I think, to actually marry, to make that commitment. Here perhaps the numbers remain a little bit high because of that.
There is a trend, you are right, across the Western world for cohabitation. Although, you know, some of the cohabitations you see in Scandinavia are very much like marriage. There are rights and obligations. And, for example, I was reading about the formation of the couple in the UK. Once a couple, they move together, they give that a lot of thinking. It's not
a big decision.
It's a big decision. So it's not just, you know, you go, it's nothing. Mm. It's a big decision. But because the couple relationship has become more of a personal relationship and not an institutionalized one, The way one positions and the couple positions, the way they position themselves is different. In Malta, there is that pressure, I think, also because, you know, of the family. It's a feast, it's a celebration, it's a ritual, and many go for that kind of ritual. You know, they find it that it helps them for sure. Because I don't think they would go to it. But there is that even the parents. I think we live in a country where the parents are still have an influence, much more influence on the children. Sibyl Mitzi, you know, the anthropologist, had spoken about that. They still have a lot of influence, more subtle nowadays, but it's still there. And I think it's a known fact even in research. The older we get, the more conservative we become, and the more we hang on to things that counted a lot for us as parents. And maybe that push influence, you know, the children.
There is another point, there are plenty, and we don't have time, unfortunately, to discuss them all. The fact that many girls now are going to university, and some of them spend, if they become lawyers, they have 6 years here and more, and therefore are marrying later, or having relationships, or having their children later.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps this is perhaps impinging a bit on that scene, the couple scene in Malta. Things have perhaps changed a little bit. I got married at 22.
Yes,
I mean,
of course.
My children laugh at me to think that I married at 22.
Because today, at 22, you're still considered as an adolescent, almost an adolescent, but an adult adolescent. You're still growing, you're still learning, you're still, you know, finding out who you are. Your identity is not yet formed. When you get married, you have an identity as a married person. So, yes, because of education, things have changed, especially for those who are in that situation where they can go to university and continue their education. And there is more independence as well.
I would have hoped, perhaps, that the later they go for this committed couple situation, the better, in the sense that they would be more mature and know themselves better and know each other better. But I don't know whether that actually is true, whether that
There is also, one would think that the more you think about that decision, the more, you know, the more you try to do it well. But there is also this challenge in couple relationships now between individualism and connectedness. So, you know,
it's a double-edged sword, really.
Yes, and that is the challenge, I would say, that, for example, career couples need to think more of. How much do they value the relationship? Are they prepared to work for their relationship as much as they work for their career? And I think that they are both very important, if I had to put in my 2 pence worth. And they need to have time. I believe we don't do enough education on relationships. Relationships are fundamental for human beings. We are wired to connect. And we don't stress that enough, I think. And we can never actually stress that enough.
In fact, and one last question I was going to ask you was, one of your publications anyway, is the changing landscape of Maltese families. What is this changing landscape? And as we've been saying, the nuclear family is still prevalent in Malta, but certainly not the only model. So how do you feel that society eventually will be affected by that, really, by the changing landscape of our families? Will we all learn to cope with the different situations that there are?
Oh, I think that the family is very resilient, you know, and it has, history has shown us that it accommodates to different forms and different types. So No, I think if the family didn't exist, we would have to invent it, because it's so economic and it provides, you know, a special place, a nest that is so important for human beings. But obviously, as we have been saying already, changes continue to take place. Marriage continues to be important, even for same-sex couples, but we have living together as, you know, a trend that we are seeing. There is greater choice. Expectations as well have changed a lot. Given that marriage has become a personal choice, it's a personal relationship, the expectations have become much higher, and maybe the media has influenced us a lot on this. And the media influences especially people who do not have good experiences to rely on. They idealize situations through the media, and that becomes very challenging, because how do you translate that into practice when it is so ideal? We do not live in an ideal world. You know, we do, you know, sometimes not get on. The important thing is that we know how to repair a relationship when we, you know, mess it up a bit. And the other thing that is we need to look into with the globalization. I mean, in Malta, many young people with a lot of talent are leaving the country. I hope they come back.
Maltese tend to want to come back if they can.
Yeah, well, that, I think it's important. That would be ideal. And also, I believe we need to be aware that globalization has brought about a lot of inequality between the rich and the people who are living in advantage, who are, you know, who have a lot of opportunities, and the ones who do not continue their education and have extremely limited opportunities. And, you know,
lots of talent lies there that's not being utilized.
Yes. They are as intelligent as the ones who, you know, who live in a comfortable situation. But we need to help them, you know, and empower them to continue to grow and to continue to increase their skills.
Well, with that very important point, I'd like to thank Professor Angela Bela for coming on University Matters today to talk to us about the family.
You've been listening to University Matters on Campus FM. Do join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye. Il-programm li għadkom kem smajtu kien miġju plilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.